We'll see, man. We'll see if I survive. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hunt Lift Deep podcast, brought to you by Hunt Lift Deep Official. I'm Carter, and I'm back with Perry. We're on a bit of a hot streak right here, Perry.
I like it, man. We are. let's keep the good times rolling, man.
That's right.
It's a Sunday morning. It's gloomy outside, foggy, nasty. Let's record a podcast.
Yep. Yeah, heck yeah. On our episode this week, our esteemed guest of the week, we have Jason Marks coming at us from Team Easties, HLE team member, first podcast.
Let's go.
Feels so lighter, you know?
Heck yeah, man. Well, you're already squared away for podcasting with a backdrop like that, man, with your elk and your deer and
you
your
turkey. Look somewhat professional. What you don't realize is there's nothing but pink insulation sticking out over my head. So if that falls on me in the middle of this, it's game over. You know? Lost all credibility.
That's the beauty of podcasting, man. They only see what's right here.
Exactly. Yep.
My closet's right there. My bathroom's right there. Nobody needs to know that, you know?
That's awesome.
Well, stoked to have you on, dude.
Appreciate it.
Before we mashed record, we were joking about having a breakfast beer and maybe hitting the bourbon a little early. When we first started doing these podcasts, me, Perry, and Luke would have to get like pretty ripped to do them because we were so nervous at the beginning for a while. There's some pretty unfettered access to alcohol for some of those earlier episodes before we toned it down a little bit.
You know, 100%. That probably was something I probably should have tried when I first started standing in front of the camera for any of my Instagram crap. When I first started doing Instagrams, like things, I didn't like being in front of the camera. I have no problem talking in like public, but for whatever reason, put a stupid phone right in front of my face and I just stutter it up.
I hate it, dude. It's the worst.
I go through like 25 cuts to just going, just shaking my head. And I just finally went, I don't even care anymore. And then weirdly enough, it just started flowing.
Yeah,
maybe a little shot of bourbon or two before I started off. Right.
So. And as a business owner, dude, and, you know, you're making a space for yourself on social media with Team Easties. So you got to be comfortable in front of the camera.
Getting there. Still working out some kinks, but I'm getting there. But yeah, that was actually one of the things when I talked to Luke a few weeks ago. He was like, man, if you don't like social media, you're in the wrong business. If you're starting a business, I was like, oh, I know. But you know, it is what it is. You adapt and overcome, right?
For sure, dude. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we start at the beginning, Jason? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background before we jump into kind of the background of Team Easties?
All right. So, I mean, the short of the long is really medically retired from the Army. I was Special Operations. In 2018, they tried kicking me out before I fought it. Was able to appeal and stay in for a few more years and kept deploying. I loved my job, man. And unfortunately, being Special Operations, when you're getting out, you have a kind of a cheat code, if you will. They assign you this caretaker, care coalition provider is what they were called at the time. He was actually one of my old sergeant majors that he was double dipping. He was doing a civilian contract thing like right before he retired. I won't say his name, but anyway, they basically get you out of, which at the time is awesome. They get you out of all of the ACAP process. So you don't have to go through, not all of it, but you don't have to like build a business plan. You don't have to do this, all this other stuff. They're like, here's a waiver for that. Don't go to this class. Don't go to this class. You don't need it, man. You're fine. I'm like, heck yeah, man. I'm just going to go home and, you know, kick my boots off a little early today. Oh, if I could go back, I would have taken those classes twice, man. But again, at the time it was great. And I was like, I'm happy to have this, but, now they do take care of you afterwards. So you were assigned to this care coalition provider for life, and obviously they might swap out, but you know, they take care of a lot of other stuff for you when you get out. But did the contract thing for a couple of years after that, and then COVID hit, shut everything down, and we had my little boy, and I was like, well, I'll just stay home because the wife was working, boredom hit, and I just started doing something. Really, it was it kind of started with me and he was actually my old, captain. We hunt out west together, and he goes on all the hunts that he and I go on all these hunts together. And kind of in the military, you got what's called a VS-17 panel. I think all branches use it, predominantly probably the Army, but it's any kind of, it's a visual signal panel. Use it for all kind of different things, from the air, from, you know, across canyons, whatever. And we were like, you know, we're 6, 7, 8 miles off of any roads back here hunting. Probably, yeah, I got my Garmin in reach, but that just gives the long range target. They still got to fly around looking for you, and we're in camo. So I decided to just make one for ourselves. And I was like, you know what, let's give it night. Like, I wanted to make it ultralight, because the VS-17 is pretty heavy. It's just not user friendly for backcountry hunting. And so I kind of did a little 2-second research, found some lightweight material, took it to a sew shop, because back then I didn't know how to sew, and made this just kind of junker with some reflective webbing on it. But it was great. It weighed like 4 ounces, and I thought that was light, and it was cool. And kind of weirdly fell into some people with a 3-letter agency, and they saw it, liked it for an HLZ, for helicopter landing zone. And basically one of those guys told me, get this thing patented, because people are already starting to ask about it. It didn't really even register with me to do something like that, you know. I was just like, oh, it's just the thing that I carry in the woods. And so I was like, you know what, there's nothing like this on the market, like anywhere. Like, you go into, like, there's tons of survival kits, but it's all medical stuff for, like, yeah, hydration or food, or there's nothing to help you get found. The best thing you're going to find is, like, a signal mirror. Well, guess what? It's cloudy day. Good luck. It's night out. Good luck. Your batteries are dead in your flashlight. Good luck. You're screwed. So unless you're out during the daytime with, you know, a good sunny day with a signal mirror, that's the only thing you got going for you. And so we just went with this bright orange lightweight ripstop. I did a little extra research on proper materials, proper weights, different kinds of things. And even when, I mean, I got a little aggressive with it. I even went into like finding out what type of an oil dip will make sure that the color doesn't fade and all this other stuff. And did the research on, there's actually a video called The Science of Color, and Sitka Gear, of all like companies, they really kind of dove into that. And so you go through that, you like read through and watch that video, and they talk about colors and how they change over distances. And there's certain colors that will just, it might be bright in your face right up front, but get 200-300 yards away and it just disappears to like your naked eye. So I made sure that I found the right colors for that. Obviously blaze orange being a big one. That's pretty obvious. But if blaze orange gets wet, it can turn into almost a dark red, which over distance can start to look brown. And that's why I had to look into like oil dips and things to make sure that the color did not change on this type of material. But anyway, patented it, and decided to turn it into a business. Originally, it was supposed to be just search and rescue stuff, like for hikers and backpackers. And then crazily, hunters started picking it up. A bunch of them were using it to cover their packs when they were hiking out with, you know, antlers on their back and stuff like that, because, well, you know, hunters shoot hunters when they're dumb.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just gonna say it, they're dumb.
Yeah.
Some guys have put it out, like they'd shoot an animal, and as they were getting ready to start cleaning it, they would put it next to the animal, so if someone was glassing, they didn't just see a bedded animal down there in case the guy was walked away and shoot at it. You know, just multiple purposes. One, a lot of people have been using it for flagging a spot, like a spotter. And you know, that way the guy doing the stalk can see him across the ridge and look back and get hand and arm signals where to go. And a lot of different ways the hunters started using it. And so I just kind of turned Team Easties into a bit of a hunting page ish trying to cater to both sides. But me being a hunter, obviously got some stuff back here, but me being a hunter, I kind of naturally jumped at it. You know, I was like, this will be a cool way to go about doing it. And had all these lightweight materials and different stuff that I was trying and testing out before, and just kind of got into like suppressor covers and making a few other things. But one of them I got to actually start another patent process on, and that's going to be a big one. That's going to be a real big one. I can't talk about that. I don't know who watches your podcast, but that's I've got a few people testing it right now. They're all on NDAs. And one of the guys literally said, he's like, dude, this is the head guide looked at it and goes, this is the binocular harness of 2024. He's like, there's going to be 45 companies making this thing by 2025 if you don't have it patented. So, damn. And even then, like, God, finding out crap about patents, dude, it'll cover you kind of, but it's kind of like putting a fence around your house to keep dudes from crossing through your backyard.
Yeah.
It'll deter most of them, but you're still going to get onesies and twosies that just are like, I'm jumping that fence. Screw that guy. Hopefully I don't get shot in doing it. But, you know, there's quite a few companies out there that have just totally ignored patents and called, said, take us to court. We'll tie you up for years. And it's sorry, man. It's bad. But that's the reality. It's cutthroat. I've talked to a few people that are very, very big in the industry. And they've helped me out drastically. Aaron Snyder from Cafaro being one. John Barklow from Sitka. He's been a big help too. But yeah, you talk to them about patents and they'll give you a list of companies that have ripped off their products from, you know, over the years. And, you know, they don't badmouth them, which is pretty cool. Way to put it, you know, like they take. They've gotten to the point where even John said, he goes, if I got pissed off every single time someone stole some kind of a patent from us, I'd walk around with bloody knuckles all day. He goes, I take it as flattery now.
It's a compliment.
It's the only way I have to do that. Yeah. But so we're just kind of doing it, man. And I mean, it's slow right now, but we're trying to just gain visibility. And really, that's going to come down to marketing, because every time someone of any kind of size or has like a large social media presence, anytime they talk about it, it's very quickly I start selling real fast.
Yeah.
And you know, for a few days they go really, really good, but it's reassuring that once the public sees it, they realize that it is a good product and they jump on it. It's just, like I said, I'm still early on in the whole thing, so working on doing the, you know, coming up with a good marketing plan and trying to get it in the public's eye. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, the product itself, this was the original little guy. I mean, 2.5 ounces and fits in that pouch is actually integrated into it and it's sewn in and it folds out to a 3 foot by 3 foot. It's got little loops in each corner. Each loop has actually got reflectors on it in case you do have a little bit of light on your headlamp and you're looking or fumbling around in the dark. This will pop like crazy. I can send you a bunch of videos and pictures of it from aerial videos and stuff at night. It blasts you in the face. It works with infrared too, so we've been running like night vision for military. Actually just got a bunch of video from an Apache helicopter flying overhead looking at it through night vision.
That's sick.
Just, I mean, there's a city about 10 miles in the background, and I won't say what city. He's overseas, but this thing is on the ground. And it's as bright as the actual lights of the city. I mean, that's blasting. Awesome. So yeah, we're potentially going to try to get some kind of a contract going there. But yeah, there's some agencies kind of been looking at it. We might be doing something, trying to get in contact with Border Patrol, the BORTAC guys. Worked with a few years ago. Worked with a couple of Texas Rangers, and so they're going to try to get me get my foot in the door with some people on that. But yeah, we took that larger one and shrunk it down and made one that was a little more specific to hunters, because when hunters started picking it up. And so we made a 20-incher, and instead of a loop on every single corner, we did one large loop that can actually fit over the objective lens of a spotting scope up to a 65 millimeter. It won't fit over the big 85s, but the other side's got just two tassels, and you can tie that off to your pack. You can throw it in your bino harness. John Barklow just put a video out where he was actually talking about putting this in his bino harness. That one only weighs 1.2 ounces. So you don't even know it's there.
Yeah.
So that one's been gearing towards hunters mostly, and it still blasts you in the face at night, but it's a quick way to find your pack, especially if you drop, like I've dropped my pack before to go on a stalk and
I was
going to be stalking 50, 60 yards and didn't bother marking it on Onyx because I was right on the animal. Before I know it, I'm a half mile around the bend of the mountain and the sun's setting I'm going, I hope I can find that back.
Yeah.
So, but that, you blast that thing with a flashlight, you'll see it across the mountain. I promise you that.
Yeah, dude, I'm running through every scenario in my mind where that would have been a game changer. In my first antelope hunt, I dropped my pack and I got sucked in. If you've ever hunted antelope, you know how it is. You can get sucked in on these stalks with them because they'll skitter off a little bit. And then you're like, all right, I'm going to, you know, I can get closer. And then it's like they just pull you in on a string, man. And I dropped my pack, which now I know, buddy, just bring your pack with you. Brown. And in the eastern part of Wyoming, everything just disappears out there. Everything looks the same. And I spent like 2 hours looking for my pack. And I probably only went, you know, 500-600 yards, but couldn't find my pack. Got the antelope down, but couldn't find my pack afterwards. Or like, Perry, how cool would that have been to have on our last antelope trip, especially with all those guys out there hunting the same lease, like just from a safety point of view.
No, I can totally see why the hunting community is gravitating towards this type of product. I mean, there's, like you say, there's almost endless applications when you're out there, especially for Western hunting. I mean, you know, all safety concerns. You know, I had the same situation, Carter, on an antelope stalk, dropped a pack. Again, didn't even go that very far, but in that sagebrush kind of monotone environment, you just lose stuff very quickly. And well, I mean,
your goal is to blend into everything around you, and that includes everything. And a lot of guys, a lot of like states don't require blaze orange hats, blaze orange, you know, vests, nothing like that. And if you're not required it, most dudes don't use it because they don't want it. And then if you do or are required it, well, maybe you pop your hat off for that last few feet of stalk. I don't know. Not saying that you did it or anybody does it, but you know, it's not an easy tuck in a pack or anything like that. Whereas like John Barclay was even saying, like this little tiny thing, when it's rolled up, it's this big.
Yeah.
He just pops it in. He pops it in actually in with his binos. So that he's got his binos out. And if he needs real quick to pull it out and flash his buddy or something, it's right there. And he just pops, shoves it right back in. But yeah, I used it myself, this past November. Not a antelope, but we were on mule deer. We were up in the Badlands, and I took off. Might have got a little ahead of my buddies, and I had a radio, and I called back to him. I said, "Hey, there, you need to get up here." And so we cut radio contact after that, and I dropped my pack and maneuvered around a corner, but they didn't know where I was, and I said, they saw my pack because I actually took the second to wrap that around my pack real quick. And so they knew I was close by. And once they got to my pack, they looked over and I was right, you know, just right around the little lip there. But yeah, they were a little bit behind me. I might've taken off a little too fast. I got in the zone, man. You know, I was trying to get my buddy his first mule deer, and yeah, got in the zone a little bit on that one. So,
Jason, I have to imagine that some of the specific features on your products, like for instance the reflective on the actual loops there, are influenced by a lot of your time and your background with special operations. How much does that play into your initial design or your modifications of these products as you draw on your time and your military career?
So yeah, it did. One of the reasons there's companies that make slightly lighter weight material, but I chose ripstop mostly for, I mean, almost everything in the military is ripstop, and there's a reason behind it. That extra thread, that gridded thread throughout, it will stop the rip. You know, if there's sooner or later one of these is going to get a stick through it, or you know, a briar is going to catch it. But you're still going to be able to hold it. It's still going to hold together. It's only going to rip so far. So that played a role in that. The reflective material in general, I mean, this is paracord. I just gutted it. You know, parachute cord. It's, you know, 550 cord. We called it the military. I just found a company that added, there's a few of them already out there, but I had to order such a large amount that they custom made it for me, already gutted. But it's got the reflective material in there. Just trying to literally, I mean, yeah, you can find a corner in the dark, but I just was trying to really add every advantage to it as possible. You know, if you're digging around and for some reason there's just this much sticking up out of your pack and the rest is covered up by something else, you're going to at least see that. You know, I didn't want at any point in time something to not be really visually, like, easy to see, you know, quickly and well. So I just wanted to make sure that every inch of it was just in some way, shape, or form visual. You can actually see the reflective material in these from about 230 feet off the ground from a helo. Oh,
damn.
I didn't expect. I've got video and I'm going, what is that reflecting over there? And I realized it was the tassels and I went, holy crap. Okay. Didn't see that coming. Dang, pleasant man. Surprise, obviously a good one. But, yeah, I just wanted everything, man. It was, everybody likes using a VS-17 panel in the military, especially for airborne operations of any kind, but it doesn't have night capabilities. So that influenced me and said, well, that's a cool thing to have, but it does not have night capabilities. So
it's only good for half the time.
I made basically a mini lightweight version with night capabilities and, you know, kind of just ran with that. So, yeah. Long answer to just say yes.
That's sweet, man. And this product that we're talking about, what do you call it?
So the larger one is called ELAMS. It's Emergency Landing Area Marking System, because we actually have a larger one that is specifically designed for, actually just sold one to a fire department the other day. For helicopter landing zones, and this it's more like for EMS and first responder type stuff. It's not lightweight; it's actually got weights sewn in strategically. But because it is an actual system, the stuff pouch that it comes in is large enough to fit an Algen bottle. That creates an anchor. We basically tested it to make sure that when a helicopter comes in to land on it, it does not get caught up in the prop wash and suck it back into the blades. So it is a whole landing area marking system. This one fell in under the same patent. And so we just named it, we just kept it with the ELAMS. We just call it the ultralight, or the, I think I call it the mini stuff, because stuff sounded a little mini pouch. And then this one, I just started calling for the hunters specifically, the little tiny one, the backcountry location marker. Simple enough name. Like I said, we got a few other little things on the website too, but those are my babies that got me going and got me started. So, but yeah, it's really, if you ever want to start a business that has products and you decide to come up with a product that's new, just naming it will take 6 weeks and a team of attorneys.
Yeah.
Oh. Actually, I was talking to John Barklow the other day about it, and he's like, oh, what are you naming it? And I said, dude, I don't know. He goes, I freaking hate naming stuff. He's like, you sit down and work for weeks and weeks and weeks, hand the attorneys this big list of paperwork, and 2 days later they go, you wasted your time. All of these are taken in some way, shape, form, or another.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, that's why, like, pharmaceutical companies, they use these weird names, AstraZeneca and all these other crazy. They make stuff up that does not. It's not even going to be close to a name, and it's the quickest, easiest. I can't name a product. This is not an AstraZeneca, whatever that even is. I don't know. But yeah, so I got to make something that makes some kind of sense. And so acronyms have been kind of a big help on that. But yeah, good luck coming up with a new product and coming up with a name for it. It becomes a pain in the butt.
How daunting has that process been? I mean, you mentioned like the patent and the marketing and product development, naming, and all these things. I mean, it sounds like when you first did this, you didn't go into it with the idea of launching it into a business, right? It just kind of happened organically. So, like, has that aspect of it been daunting? Has it been, you know, what you expected, more than you expected?
It's been a lot more than I expected. It's starting a business is tough, especially not having gone through any kind of business courses or anything like that that the military does offer now.
Yeah.
But no, it was not intended to happen. We just kind of, like you said, organically just started doing it. You bleed money very quickly. And I've been doing my very, very best to self-fund this. And I've sold quite a bit of these, and I'm maybe halfway out of debt. Like, it's patent. The patents can go any range anywhere from $7,000 to $15,000. You know, production. I did reach out to a manufacturer to try to help me with production. That was several thousand dollars, and then they came back being absolute garbage, and I won't sell them. So he's working on replacing every single one of them right now. Yeah, that was fun. So that's the other thing too, is most of these like manufacturers, they won't touch you unless you come at them with $100,000. And I'm not exaggerating, $100,000 contract. And I'm going, golly, I can throw you like $6,000 or $7,000, you know. Yeah. you know, I just want a few hundred of these made just so that I can take a breath, you know, because honestly, right around this corner from me is my sewing table.
Yeah,
down here in my, I call it my dungeon. It's the basement, and you know, this just looks really cool. Like I said, it's all the basement down here, man. So, but yeah, I just needed to breathe, and so I reached out to this manufacturer, and I guess you get what you pay for, you know. But if you can't afford $100,000 contract, you can't afford $100,000 contract. So, yeah, it really kind of comes down to if anyone wants to start the and I'm actually working on this now, a year and a half in. The first thing you need to do is build a business plan. If anyone wants to open a business that is going to be selling physical materials outside of t-shirts or something like that, build a business plan and put together some kind of put together a solid sales pitch for investors, because you're going to freaking need it sooner or later. You may be able to like support some of it, you know, some of it at first, but it's you got to do it right. It's definitely tough to self-fund unless you got a little extra change in your pocket. So, but it's been a lot of fun. I mean, ups and downs for sure, you know.
Yeah.
Start looking up, because you're actually selling a bunch of it. And you're like, all right, we're on the right track. Get a manufacturer to help out, and they all come out looking like just crap. I can't even. I was so frustrated. I might have pissed the wife off. I was just bad mood. And, I posted on Instagram a couple of weeks ago. I don't even know if it was an actual post or just in my story, but I was like, I will not sell garbage or something along those lines. I'm like, I'm not doing it. And, I literally have a whole pile of them over there in the corner that I might just burn. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I was like, dude, what? And you said these were quality checks. Like, I don't know. What quality did you check them for, that they're orange? Because that's about the only thing you succeeded by doing. So I sent them the material. I sent him everything. And I even made a YouTube video for him to show his workers, this is how you do it. Because the first couple he sent me were, like, as a test, I wasn't real thrilled with. And I was like, here, have them watch this video and have them do it. They clearly didn't watch that video. Like, there are so many different things. Like, I do this whole thing in one stitch. Wow. Do not cut it until the very end.
Dang.
I literally, the entire thing is one stitch. They cut it on every single corner, every single end. There's just straight threads. I'm like, burn the threads, cut it up, make it look clean. I tried to salvage a few of them. They're all right. Some of them are just so bad. I can't do it. So, but yeah, been doing it myself. I've learned a few little like ins and outs, and you know, like little like quicker ways of doing it and cleaner ways to make it look better. And I'm like, just do it this way, please. Because I don't want to sell garbage. You know, like nobody wants to buy something. And it could literally just be me. Like, I might send it to you, and you're like, dude, this looks great. And I'm going, yeah. You didn't see it. You know, like, I don't know. I will look at it, and I kind of OCD it, and I go, no, not happening.
Well, yeah. Dude, when something's your baby, when something's your brainchild, and you're, you know, like, and you're going to put your name behind it, man, like, I respect where perfection is the standard. That's, you know,
there's a lot of, you'll find a lot of interesting stuff out when you start a business. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So some things are actually pretty disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, you just put out a great video. Was that yesterday? About where you broke down the price a couple days ago. Broke down the price difference. And Perry and I were talking about this before because HLE, we're in the apparel world too. And people say they want products made in America. but people oftentimes will balk at made in America prices. And you did a good job breaking down the cost analysis. I don't know if you have your little black book handy or not, but let's hear it.
I see a ton of different companies, man, that are just respectable companies, but they're just, their response is, it's made in America. It's made in America parts. It's made in America everything. It's all more expensive. I'm like, okay, well, cool. How much more expensive? Like, but these guys, most of these guys don't have time or the effort. I've got, you know, I just got frustrated the other day and saw somebody else said something about it. And I'm like, you know, people don't know how much more expensive it is, you know, and, you know, probably a lot of your viewers don't even follow me. So yeah, real fast, like American made just to go through this product right here.
So all of it is made in America, every piece.
So honestly, no, I'll be completely honest with you. There are, most of it is the issue that I'm having right now is this, the orange. Nobody in America makes lightweight orange ripstop. There are companies that make silk poly nylons and things like that, but none of them offer ripstop. I, in full disclosure, I had to go outside of the U.S. to get this. Doesn't mean I'm paying $2 a yard for it because I'm paying for something that is not in the U.S. and they know it.
Yeah.
But no, I could not. And I mean, dude, I searched, I called, I actually had some buddies in the textile business. And they reached around, that was a bad way to put it. They called around and reached out. maybe edit that, I don't know. or leave it in there, because that's me. No, they reached out and did a lot of calling around for me, and I appreciated the heck out of it. But nobody offered a ripstop that was in a 20 to 30 denier nylon, and that's really where I wanted to be. And I really didn't want to not have that ripstop aspect to it, because you know, like I know, like Seek Outside and a couple other companies that make the tents, they're American made lightweight 20-30 denier nylons, but they're not ripstop, and your tent isn't going to go walking through the woods with you or bushes with you. You know, normally you're going to find a nice open area and set it up. It's going to be in your pack until you set it up. Not such a big deal. Something like this, if I'm literally attaching it to my belt loop and I'm walking, I could catch it and rip it. So no, the orange, and if anyone knows a company in America that makes orange ripstop,
like, let them know.
Let me know. The lowest I could find was like a 80 denier, which would have made this thing probably 7 or 8 ounces. Mm. It's just, but yeah, the orange, for like American made something similar to it, the sil nylons and stuff like that, they're anywhere from $9 to $12 a yard. Whoa. Overseas for the sil nylons and for some of this stuff, it's like the sil nylons are easy to get. $2 and a quarter dollars, like $2.24 is like the average. But yeah, they know we don't have this in America. So that's fun. So the reflective ribbon, the main webbing, that is US stuff. That's $3 a yard, but I can actually reach out overseas right now and get it at 28 cents a yard.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
The reflective cord, this little stuff right here, in the U.S. is 74 cents a yard for it. That's what I'm paying. The if I go overseas, 6 cents a yard.
My goodness.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a markup on some of this crap, dude. The little
100%.
Yeah. The pouch, the cord lock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I'm paying 29 cents per. Doesn't sound expensive, but it adds up. I can get them overseas for 3 cents.
Three?
3 cents. Three cents a piece overseas. If I buy 1,000 of these, I buy 1,000 of them in the U.S., 29 cents.
Wow.
And then in caps, 23 cents over here, 2 cents overseas, crap like that. And then it comes down to labor. Like your average, you know, I'm looking at opening my own store. I just actually bought a bunch of sewing machines yesterday. And trying to get, because obviously I can't trust manufacturers, but if I can run the store, not a store, but you know, a building where I can actually have my own employees sewing the way that I want it to be sewed, but I got to pay these people $12 to $16 per hour. Overseas, you're paying them $2, $3. I think it was between $2 and $5, depending on the country you look at. But yeah, I mean, you could probably build this whole thing over in Vietnam or something for, with labor, $6 or $7, maybe something like that. Over here, it's going to cost you probably pushing the $22 to $25 mark for just like, you know, if I had actual labor. I mean, technically, I'm charging for my time selling it, and then you have to mark it up. Yep. That's for the small one, $22, $25 for the small one, probably depending on, you know, everything. But you've got to mark it up a good percentage, or you're not going to make anything. But these poor guys that run like the backpack companies, man, you don't even want to know what Cordura markups are. Like, you can do well in the backpack community and company and stuff like that, or running, like, if you get a good name for yourself, but. That's where it gets real tempting. The U.S., you're looking at $22 per square yard for Cordura, depending, like, for just the, like, lower-end, like, versions of it. Overseas, you're, like, $5, $6.
Wow.
Like, it could get real tempting if you're, like, you know, doing some heavier-duty material, you know, products. It can get real tempting to drop down to that $5 a yard versus $22, $23 a yard. So,
but yeah, so that's a big difference, man. That's what people need to be paying attention to.
And if you don't know, you don't know who's gonna go, well, I can get, you know, I saw somebody the other day posted a thing, they sell vinyl harnesses and stuff like that, and they posted a review somebody put on there that didn't even buy one. They're like, I'm not spending $130 on a vinyl harness when I found a $29.99 on Amazon. He's like, well, that's cool, it's made in China. Have fun with it. It'll last you a week or two on a hunt, and then it's going to rip and fall apart, most likely, you know. But then it comes down. His response was, "It's made in America. It's more expensive." But if you don't break it down, nobody else is going to take time out of their day, or even have the capability really to look up that type of material. I've got different accounts with different companies and stuff like that, and so I can go in and look at their databases and see what things cost. So I just took me 10 minutes to find all that info, but. Figured it would help out. So, but I mean, like I said, the only thing I can't find in the U.S. is the orange ripstop. Everything else I get here, and then it is obviously made here because, well, I live here. So
maybe we have a lucky listener in the ripstop business. We'll find out.
That's why I said, unless you know somebody, somebody knows somebody, let me know. So I'll happily convert it over. But gosh, man, I could not find it.
Yeah.
So. And then, I mean, you can buy it from American companies, but they're just the in-between guy. So if I'm going to pad, you know, Vietnam's pockets, or if I'm going to pad anyone's pockets, like, I'm not going to pad, you know, if they're buying it for $2.50 a yard from Vietnam and then selling it to me for $9.50 a yard, I'm not going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and most of these companies, I found out that that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I'm not going to give you that money when I could just do the same thing you're doing and get it cheaper myself. You know, so if I got to pad another country's pockets, I'm not going to pad somebody else's pockets between me and them. So I don't know. But yeah, other than the orange, everything else is here and it is all assembled here. But yeah, that was, that's been a pain in the butt trying to find everything. So
did you know how to wield a sewing machine prior to this, Jason? Or is that a recent special operations?
Didn't teach you how to do that? Seven or eight, my grandma showed me how to use one for, like, you know, one time, just because that's what she was doing, you know, and never looked at it again. But now I, on a whim, I was like, I can learn this. I know I can.
Yeah.
And a handful of YouTube videos later, and about two or three machines later, because either I would break it or I didn't know how to work something on it. I finally found a pretty cool little machine, and, It does everything I need it to do. It's not one of the more higher end versions, but I'm also not sewing, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week on it. I'm trying, you know, more like 3, 4, 5 hours a day, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, because there's plenty of other time I got to be doing office work or filing crap or whatever. But no, I did not know how to do it. And so actually one of the very first ones that I sent out, I sent a couple of free ones out to, just I just winged it, man. I went on Instagram and said, this guy's got a lot of followers. Let me see. Just like, I didn't want him to promote it. And nobody's, I've not paid anyone to promote this thing. But I just reached out in a DM and said, hey, would you be willing to look at this thing and just give me your honest opinion? And a couple of guys said, yeah, send it to me. And so I shipped it out to them. And one of them, I literally wrote in a letter. I like wrote a little handwritten note in there. I was like, I'm sorry about the sewing. I've only been sewing for about 2 months now. And so I just tell me if you think this is a good idea, a good product. And it was a resounding yes. And it was kind of interesting that most everybody was like, actually, the sewing's pretty good. And I'm going, okay, I guess, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's been a year now. I'm still learning different terminology and crap like that for sewing. I just went into a little sew store the other day to pick up these industrial machines. And these ladies are like, well, what kind of blah, blah, blah do you need? And I'm going, I don't know what that word means. And they just laugh at you and go, it's over here, honey. Don't worry. I'm like, all right, thank you. And then they teach me. So
there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Another one of your products that I want to showcase that I think is way cool is your suppressor cover.
Yeah.
The dust cover.
I can grab one real quick. If you want
to do it. I want to see it.
All right. Hold on.
Because that thing is way cool. What a brilliant idea.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, yeah, suppressor covers. You can get a whole rifle cover that goes just buttstock all the way to the end of the barrel. And some of them are a little bit larger for suppressors. But if you just don't need that and you're just worried about that light rain or whatever, I just took some of the extra material that I had left over. I threw a nylon webbing loop on the end of it just to quick grab it. And these are actually, like you can cinch it down, but it's elastic. Good Lord, that word just did not flow. But what I basically do is I'll throw it over my suppressor and cinch it down just enough to where it's not going to come off on its own, but to where I can grab it and that elastic allows it to pop over. This past November, and I make them, not many guys like them in orange, but I figured I'd make them in orange too, just if you put the rifle down for whatever reason to go, I don't know, go behind a tree for 10 seconds, turn around and it's right there and you're staring you in the face. Everyone I've sold so far has been the OD green. But yeah, they're water resistant. I wouldn't go stick it in a lake or anything like that. But I've done some testing with it. I've slid it over like a graduated cylinder and just put it in the shower and keeps water out of it for several minutes anyway. So I mean, if you're in a downpour rain, it's still gonna help you out. But just keeping that rain from going down the barrel or dirt and dust or anything like that, twigs, like there's actually like Go Hunt makes these for the ends of your barrels, but it's just going to cover the end of your barrel. They don't make them big enough for a suppressor.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of other guys will put a piece of tape over the end of the barrel. Then you got like this sticky tacky mess at the end of the hunt. And I'm not about that. I like keeping my stuff really clean. So these don't weigh anything either. And you just pop it off, throw it in your pocket and go down that road.
Well, but dude, my suppressor costs as much as my rifle, so I want to protect that thing for sure.
Yes. Well, and we can't tie it back to this exactly, but on this my last trip, I kept mine on. It was foggy and misty almost every single day. It would break, but the mornings were just trash. I mean, I've got a few pictures where you can't see me 30 yards in front of the guy taking the picture hardly. But I kept this on through the whole thing. My buddy had one, and he didn't have it on a couple of days. And it was cold as crap. And got in a little bit of rain. And then everything froze over. His first shot at his mule deer, not saying this was it, but could have played a role in some way, shape, or form. He had a soft hit on the primer. Chucked it out, popped it back in. Or another round in, was able to make the second shot, but you know, was it due to a little bit of ice in there or something like that? I don't know. Could have just been that the oil he was using kind of thickened up with the low temps. not sure, but either way, mine fired. So I'm going to just say that
I'm
it was
just
this.
Saying.
Somebody yeah. out there, somebody in the comments or whatever is going to be like, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. This is the science. Dude, I ain't worrying about the science. This is the science I need. I saw it in person. That's it. Got nothing else to say about it.
Yeah. It's just another aspect to training and preparedness, man. Just control what you can control. Anybody who's hunted for any amount of time knows there's so many variables that you have zero control over. And this is another way to mitigate several of those.
It is. And I think I saw them like $18 or something, $14, $18. I don't even remember. But they're not much. But yeah, to keep dirt and grime and dust and branches and water out of your barrel, to me, it's worth it. And like I said, it's so, I mean, I pull it off, wad it up, shove it in my pocket and make my stock.
Yeah.
No problem. But that's kind of always been my, I don't know, since I started doing this, it's kind of been my thing is to come up with something different. Like, everybody makes vino harnesses, everybody makes leg gaiters, everybody makes this, that, the other. Cool. I can't keep up with that. There's no way me starting off a company making vino harnesses is going to get anywhere. And I came up with the marker, and that's not on the market anywhere. Still isn't until China sees this video and then they start making it. But and then everybody can buy them for $12, you know.
Right.
But I hope yours falls apart if you do. Between that, the suppressor cover, this other thing that I've got coming out, I sent it out to a couple guys to test, and they're testing it, and it's the binocular harness of 2024. I'm hoping, if I'm going to release it, it'll get released one way or another. There's a little bit of talk with a large company. I'm not going to jinx myself, but I'm hoping. If I get the patent pending pretty soon, we're going to have a sit down. There's an interest in it. And if that's the case, then have it.
Yeah,
dude. It's exciting.
Give me a couple dollars and we'll call it a day. But yeah. So I may not be the one releasing it. We'll see. But I will have the patent for it. Hopefully in the next, well, pending, which will, it holds my place in line basically. And that is the one nice thing about the U.S. Patent Office is you can't bribe your way up any farther up the line.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, just something about coming up with a product that does not exist has kind of been my thing. I've just really enjoyed doing it, and I find what's needed, and I'm like, man, I really wish we had something that could do that. Look everywhere, and you can't find it, and give it a shot and try to build one.
Dude, it's
the American dream,
like,
man.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like the most American thing you can do. I teach U.S. history in high school as my day job, and like we're learning about the Gilded Age right now and all these new inventions at the turn of the century, and it's really cool what you're doing, man. Like, you're an inventor, whether you think about it like that or not. Like, getting out of the military, you learned, picked up a sewing machine, and now you're an inventor with like patents and patent pending, and it's like the most American thing you could do, man. It's way cool.
That's cool to hear. I mean, I guess I am an inventor. I haven't really thought about it like that, honestly. I'm just doing stuff that makes sense. So yeah, it's cool to kind of hear it that way and hear it come from somebody else. I enjoy it, man. Honestly, I think a lot more people should try it. Like, there's a lot of people out there that have ideas. Since I kind of got in with the HLE crowd, I've had a couple other people go, man, I've really been thinking about doing this. I really want to make this kind of thing. And well, then make it, man. Let's go. I'll even help you. I don't care. You know, I don't need rights to anything. Just let's talk. If you want to make it, if it's sewable, I can do it.
Yeah.
So you need a welder, I can run a bead, but God, it ain't gonna be pretty. So you know. But been talking with Frank, the Northeast guy. He's got a
I had a feeling ideas. He's a big idea guy.
Yeah, well, he does have a lot of ideas. No, he's awesome, man. He's
shout out to Frank.
Love you, Frank. He's got some really cool ideas to do with like bird dogs and stuff like that. And I was like, dude, I'll be happy to help you out, man. You know, I'm not, I, I'm not, not going to sit here and be like, oh, I got too much, no. I had to do this myself. And, if you got the ideas, but you don't necessarily have network. That's everything, man. Like, he found me through HLE. I said, I do XYZ. Ask me if I'm willing to help. What's the worst I can do? Say no. And then you go, all right, well, I'll find someone else or I'll try to do it myself. Well, I got a lot of no's, so I started doing it myself. But, I'm not going to, especially being this new into it, there is no way. If someone came to me and went, man, I got a really cool idea, will you help me? There's no way I'm going to turn my back on that person. They're a jerk or something? Sure, yeah, go screw yourself. But, rub each other's backs, scratch each other's backs. Like, help your neighbor, help that dude that's trying to learn something new. Success comes in a lot of different forms. And if it's just, I help somebody else get in the right direction, that's a little success for me. And I'm kind of happy with that. So,
yeah, man.
Frank, we're still going to do it. I got you, buddy. Let's do this.
Yeah, Luke says all the time, like, high tides raise all ships. And it's true, man. And sometimes in this outdoor industry, it can be a little, I'm sure all industries are like that, but the more involved and deeper we get into the outdoor industry, it can be a little cutthroat sometimes. And it's just disappointing sometimes. There's enough seats at the table for everybody, man. So I love that outlook and that kind of appreciation for helping other people, man. I appreciate that from you.
Well, I mean, that, and honestly, competition pushes you in the right direction.
Sure.
Make something better. Somebody 100%. Copies you and go, well, yeah, you copied me. You made a few things that might be better, but hold my beer. I'll get you on the next one than you did. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So competition kind of pushes everybody in the right direction. You can get mad all you want, but at the end of the day, like John Barklow said, like, take it as flattery.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, now you've just pushed me to go harder. So, but yeah, absolutely. If you're especially starting off, man, just help your buddies. There's no reason not to. And even if you're not starting off, if you have the time, do it. So I had some really big names help me out. I had no idea that Aaron Snyder and a couple of these other guys would go, yeah, I'll give you 5-10 minutes on a phone call. And then 30 minutes later and laughing and joking, we're talking about random other things that didn't even need to be talked about. But, people willing to give you a few minutes of their time, it can go a long way. Learned a lot from a lot of these guys and it's been really cool. So, yeah, I guess that's, if there's any message to take away from anything, it's just help your buddies, man. Don't turn your back on the new guy just because you think you might become a competition or something. It's not.
Yeah, I love that. Love that, man. Do you have any, do you have a testimonial story that stands out? Someone who's used the product in a cool situation that you heard about? That's probably got to feel good.
We got a few photos. Honestly, I don't really have any stories. I've got had a few people comment on the posts or send me private messages. Man, it was worth every penny. This thing's awesome. Stuff like that. I don't leave the house without it. I go hiking with my kids, and I carry it with me. Those are all really cool things. I haven't had any real genuine testimonials. Sooner or later, honestly, I hope that one of these never hits the news. Because if it hits the news, it's probably for a bad thing. Yeah. And, even if it's just a local thing where hikers stranded and you see this in the background, cool, that's my product. But, I don't wish that on anybody, but if you're in a bad situation, that's going to get you found. There was up here in New Hampshire, people disappear in the White Mountains all the freaking time. One side of the mountain will be 70 degrees. You'll turn the corner and there's 3 foot of snow and it's pouring down snow. And they lose trails and just disappear. So, just a couple of weeks ago, a guy was lost because the fog was so bad that they couldn't find him. They were getting his ping from his Garmin, and they knew he was in the general area, but the fog was so thick they couldn't figure out where he was, and they didn't want to bring the helo down. Not saying that this would have cut through the fog, but they probably would have been able to at least hit it with the light shortly after dark. They cut all searching after once it started getting dark, and the dude had to stay out overnight freezing. They found him, but stayed out overnight freezing. If he could have made it to an open area or at least a thinner fog area, and they'd have hit it with a floodlight, they
would have seen it.
And ideally, if you're the person on the ground using it and you need to get a helo's attention, don't be in the thickest crap out there. Find an open area as best you can if you're able to. and get there. But yeah, no real testimonials. Just like I said, it's always fun to get pictures of people using it in the field, wrapping, you know, elk antlers with it on their pack outs and stuff like that. And then love hearing the comments or getting the little DM here and there saying, you know, I never leave without it. And that's pretty fun.
Well, I've already got my picture planned out in my mind when I kill my first elk this fall. I'm going to hang that thing from it and send it to you. And Perry's going to be there. And we're going to be like, Jason,
let's go.
Hell yeah, man. I dig it. Where are you going?
Hopefully Wyoming. We'll see if I draw. But
yeah, I'd say draw's coming up.
It'll be a first. We could have really used the Elam on this last elk hunt in November, man. It was foggy and would blizzard every afternoon. And we had guys stalking and guys spotting about sometimes a mile distant and just couldn't see them on the side of the mountain, man. So I totally see the application. I'm going to have one in my pack forever, always.
Yeah, I always throw the big one in my pack, and then I keep the small one, the little 20-incher in my
pack. On the way is nothing, right? Yeah. Like, and why not?
Yeah, I mean, the big one's 2.5 ounces. The little one's 1.2.
Yeah.
All, you know, all in all, you still don't know it, but yeah, you don't even know it's there. But carry the small one on me in my bino harness. Like, if I got to just real quick pop it out to flag my buddy, and then if I really need something's going wrong, and I'm near my pack, I can pull out a bigger one. It's going to catch more attention.
Yeah. You
know, obviously. But yeah, this year we got some hunts planned out. We got tags for Idaho already. Went through that December 1st non-resident debacle.
Dude, it sounds like chaos.
It is chaos.
They've sent out a few questionnaires. It sounds like next year they might actually be able to change it. I guess the company they contracted to, it was like a 5-year contract or something. They could not change it. But good Lord, man, it's just bad. And then there's so many guys that like are using bots to sign themselves in, and they're signed in 1,000 times, and it opens up and they're like, oh, I only need this one, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we all were logged in and waiting in the waiting room, me and four of my buddies, and I had, I think my closest one was like 3,000 something from the front.
That's pretty good. This is...
It was. I got my tags. But one of my buddies was like 44,000 something. I really didn't get it, but you know, it's all a random. I got pretty lucky on that, and but yeah, you'll watch the numbers, and it'll go from like 6,000 people in front of you, and instantly, when somebody logs all their bots off, you know, because these influencers, man, they will do anything and everything they can, yeah. And that Idaho's aware of that. They're aware that people are doing that stuff. But yeah, you'll see it'll say 6,000 in front of you, and all of a sudden, instantly, it drops by like 800, and you're like, you did not just have 800 people within a second buy tags. No, one dude got it in and just hit log out on all of it, and yeah, I don't know how to use bots or anything. Like, I'm not techie enough to figure that out, and honestly, it's just, so yeah, these some of these influencer guys are willing to do anything it takes. So
for sure, man,
put on them. I guess they're being resilient, I suppose. I suppose. So, but yeah, we're going to put in, we're getting, I think March 20th is the deadline for New Mexico.
Nice.
Some stuff working out down there. Actually going to try to get me and my buddy that I hunt with all the time. We're going to try to go down in June or July and get our guide licenses. And we're going to work for an outfitter. Basically, he's going to, you know, he'll use this a little bit, but we're basically going to try to just set it up to do like wounded warrior hunts or like first responder hunts, stuff like that. So while we're not really going to be getting paid necessarily, it's just kind of, it's an avenue that this outfitter is willing to help us do something like that. And we're going to do like one, maybe two hunts a year or something like that. But yeah, just trying to give back if we can in some way, shape or form. And, take care of, you know, hunters or first responders, military, stuff like that. It doesn't even have to be wounded warriors, just, you know, something, you know. I mean, I know a few guys that military that have never shot an elk but have always wanted to, and well, I can provide them at least a free guide service. You know, you pay for the tags, you pay for doing lodging, cool, you cover the basics, and I'll take you out, make sure you get on a good, you know, good bowl or something like that. And the outfitter that we're working this out with, he's been really cool. He's all for it. You know, he's like, yeah, it's not taking away from me. So, and I'm happy to help out. So you guys want to run the guide, you know, I'll get you, make sure you're in the right areas and things like that. So, hoping to get that going. Probably not this year, but we're going to go down and do a little bit of work down in New Mexico and try to kind of learn some of the areas. That way for hopefully for like 2025, we can maybe start doing something like that.
Hell yeah. That sounds awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's an awesome cause, dude. Well, Perry and I would love to get on a hunt with you sometime, man, and actually meet in person. And we've rolled up on an hour here, dude. That flew. We didn't even get to talk about your love of long range shooting or anything like that, man. So we might have to do another episode but
one thing I will get out before we cut it off is, you know, I don't know how many people that aren't HLE or in the aren't in the HLE program, but if they're not, you know, it's a good thing to be a part of for sure. The community's freaking phenomenal. But I'm gonna put together an HLE for the discount codes they have for all those different companies in the app. You have to be on the app. You got to be a member. They got some pretty cool discounts. But I'm gonna throw mine in there too. I'm gonna throw a code together for all the HLE members. So anybody that's watching this, you're part of it or going to get part of it. If you want one of these things, I'll take care of you a little bit. It's better than our 10% code. I'll probably do something like 20 or something like that. Knock a little bit of change off.
Heck yeah, dude.
That's awesome, man.
We'll be doing that.
Well, I know
we're gonna do. I don't know what you want to do. The four shooters for the Georgia Clay Shoot.
Yeah, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about, man. Huge thanks to you and Team Eastie's as a whole for sponsoring our first annual HLE Clay Shoot, the first Rack'em and Schwack'em Clay Shoot that we're having March 23rd down here in Georgia. It's turning into quite the event, man, thanks to support of awesome companies like Team Eastie's and yourself, Jason. So appreciate your support there and helping us out. And Jason is sponsoring four shooters because he can't make the shoot himself. So he's sponsoring four shooters to come participate as a team. And I've already had guys lined up asking if they could have those spots that you very generously donated. So I appreciate that.
You guys can figure out how to divvy them out. I don't know. You want to have like some kind of competition or something, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Maybe we should do some kind of live thing on Instagram with your page and the podcast page and make these guys do a push-up competition or some shit.
There you go. That'd be funny.
Spencer Anderson, you better start training, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd just go send me straight into some like mental disorders of like airborne school and have the cadre just not counting. I'm going 1-1-1-1. I might have to slip back into that mindset there.
Be good for him. But yeah, appreciate your support with that, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. No, I was happy to do it. Cool setup. Like I said, since I joined the HLE guys, like it's just, I mean, not even as a business looking and just in the community aspect, it's solid. Everybody in there seems to be really cool. And, you know, having all these little like chat things, the chat groups and stuff like that, everybody's kind of got each other back, and it's pretty cool. So definitely recommend it if anyone's listening that's not in it. So well worth it.
Appreciate it, dude. Jason, before we jump off here, man, where can people find you on social media?
So on Instagram, Team Eastie's LLC, on my website, www.teameasties. I know it's kind of a weird name. Everyone's Eastie's. Yeah, just like the direction, East, IES. All right. It's a joke. We had like this running joke years ago. I won't get into it. We made fun of Westies and, we just dubbed ourselves the Easties, man, because we're all East Coast guys and just ran with it. And so now we're Team Easties. And I love it. I love the name. I love the background that we had on it. So www.teameasties.com. Go on there. You got the ELAMs. You got the backcountry location marker. You got my suppressor covers. I think I've got some hats on there still. I'm almost out of shirts, and I probably won't be bringing shirts back in, I don't think, but I got a handful of hats still on the website too. So go on there, get some swag. None of it's, you know, none of it's too awesome, but some of it's pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to the spring line, I believe, of the HLE stuff. I want that the bear, the old man with the bear skin on his head.
Oh, I saw
that on the videos from some of the shows recently. I'm like, yep, getting that one.
That'll be okay. Sweet. That'll be sweet. Perry, you got anything, man?
Nah, just appreciate you coming on, Jason. It was a pleasure hearing from you and seeing how this this all got going, and it sounds like you got some big things in the works. I know I'll definitely be getting some stuff from you as a guy who, you know, walks in the woods for a living, for his day job, and also for recreation. These are the kind of products that can, you know, like I said, you hope you never have to use them for anything in emergency, but just for to have there, make sure. I know I'll be getting some for myself. So appreciate you getting your stuff out there to the world, man.
Yeah, no, appreciate you guys having me on. Been a good chat. Always fun laughing and joking with right-minded people.
Okay, I did not meant Sunday, right?
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
All right, fellas.
Go throw something on the smoker and have something brown to drink and have a good afternoon.
So, my man. Yeah, appreciate your time, Jason.
Yeah, all right.
Listeners, as always, we appreciate the hell out of you guys. We'll talk to you next week.